Blog Talk Radio.
Truth Radio, broadcasting live in Dallas, Texas, and we are knocking up the New World Order one libtard at a time. Tonight on Higher Truth Radio, Democrats are poised to turn Chicago into another Detroit. We've got more news on the Obamacare fraud, including an audio clip. Mr. Jonathan Gruber on the Hill. Racial divide increases under Obama. Well, is anybody surprised? All Barack Obama is a better spoken Al Sharpton. But before I get into all of that, I did more research on the federal income tax, and I'll probably share more of that Thursday night. But what is really interesting is that I put a big post up on Facebook about the federal income tax and the 16th Amendment and what it actually meant and still means. And yet, where I placed it in this certain group, it was totally bypassed to talk about what to do with abandoned homes. Should homeless people get them? Should the state auction them? Should the banks auction them? And this is what people fought about all day. I even interrupted the thread with the federal income tax post and nothing. No response. Completely ignored. People are worried about proving a point of who should be in abandoned homes rather than having a discussion about how the government has been stealing from them for years via the federal income tax. Two ways. One, blatant disinformation, and two, absolute fraud. But nobody was interested in talking about that. I don't understand it. Why do you want your labor, the product of your labor, if you will, stolen from you? Why don't you want to have a discussion about it? Completely bypassed. Folks, if you've been working like me for over 30 years, you have been totally ripped off, probably in the tune of several hundred thousand dollars, and yet there's no discussion. You know, maybe my post was too long, maybe there wasn't a cute little meme attached to it, so I guess maybe it wasn't attractive enough. Unbelievable. So, all right, I'll save some interesting facts about that Thursday. So let's get into what's happening in Chicago. Now, I spoke about this particular issue that Seattle had done this several months ago. And what did it do? Did it produce jobs? No. It raised the price of services and products, and it caused people to lose jobs. Why? Because small independent business owners cannot afford to give everybody raises. And number two, if they were to do so, they've got to raise their rates on products and services. People aren't going to buy it. Just look at McDonald's. At McDonald's, a value meal. Love that term, value meal. Oh, they show you sandwich, fries, and drink, but the drink is always separate, so we know that's BS. But now it's over $9. $9 for a freaking poison-infested piece of garbage so-called meat meal. And we've seen McDonald's stock plummet, and I love it. I hope it continues to drop. I haven't eaten that slop in maybe 3 months, and I'm never going to eat that garbage. You couldn't pay me to eat it. It's not going to happen. So Seattle businesses have noticed a crunch due to this one thing, raising the minimum wage. And now Chicago is set to do that. Once again, liberals have demonstrated that they just don't get how the economy works. They're so ignorant. Is it really ignorance? Or is it really a purposeful, orchestrated event to collapse the economy, cloud and pivot? And, you know, I have to react to when people say liberals don't get it, Obama is stupid, they don't know what they're doing on Capitol Hill. Yes, they do. They know exactly what they're doing. These are not stupid people. They're evil, but they're not stupid. So, the article goes on to, when purchasing an item, do you ever comparison shop? Well, me being a guy, I rarely do. I want something, I go get it, I don't worry about price. But I get the ideology here. Most everyone has or does. And you want to get the most for your dollar. If get it costs otherwise, why comparison shop? And if you see two of the same product with different prices, all being equal, you would choose the lower cost of the item. Well, of course you would. Why would you pay extra if you don't have to? Oh, I'm sorry. You people enjoy paying the federal income tax when you don't have to, if you would just educate yourself a little bit. And so it's the same principle for labor. Labor is a product. Companies don't hire people out of a sense of charity. Even for the lowest position in the company, people come in, fill out an application, most likely submit a resume, and fill out an evaluation form. Then someone else goes through the piles of applications. And what are they doing? The HR person or whomever is comparison shopping, he or she is looking for the best, most qualified candidate for that particular position at a predetermined cost, salary. They're looking for the biggest bang for their buck. The company is looking to hire someone who will bring more value to the company than he or she will be paid. Otherwise, it is just charity. And that's what a minimum wage is. It's a forced charity. The city, state, or federal government is dictating to business how much they must pay for a product, the hired worker. That sounds like illegal price fixing, but governments can do many things that those in the private sector would go to jail for. You bet. The latest price fixer is the city of Chicago. The city council has voted to hike the minimum wage to $13 an hour by 2019. It's great. It's a great soundbite, but it will have real-world consequences, as minimum wage laws always do. Take Chicago small business owner Hank Meyer, who, like other small business owners, doesn't have a pile of cash in the back room he could just dip into. He owns two stores within the Chicago city limits. Hank has 45 employees, and says 37 of them make possibly minimum wage. He says he'll have to lay off employees if customers balk at shelling out $12 for a southern fried catfish rather than the usual $10. See, here we go. This is a small business owner telling you what he's going to have to do. Other Chicago store owners said they will lay off employees or be forced to relocate beyond city limits. Now, we saw this take place with Detroit. The government rolled in. Now, they did it a little differently. They did it with government programs. Programs cost money. Like raising the minimum wage to small business owners, it costs money. What happened to Detroit? Businesses left, took the jobs with them. Detroit is virtually a ghost town. And quite frankly, a lot of Chicago isn't that much better, but this will be disastrous. Politicians either don't understand this reality or just don't care. Well, there you go. It's the latter rather than the former. They have their soundbite for the next campaign commercial, and that's correct. People hear minimum wage hike, they're going to make more money. No, you're not. You're going to get fired. And this, again, is due to the pandemic of people not educating themselves. We've seen protests all over the place, of Walmart, of McDonald's. But you see, here's the rub. People are focusing on what large corporations can do. Can they raise the prices to their employees? Most likely. But it's the small business owner that's going to get crushed. Small independent business owners make up 50% of the hiring force in America. You start shutting them down, you're going to shut down more jobs. Small business owners don't outsource to China. They hire people locally. So small business owners in Chicago will not only have Obamacare destroying them, and we'll get into Obamacare later, but now they're going to have this minimum wage hike absolutely going to destroy them. So what about the employees that are making already $13 an hour? Well, they're going to demand a raise rather than make the same amount as a new hire. See, that's exactly what's going to happen. Again, where are these businesses supposed to get this extra money? Print it like the feds do? Borrow it or deficit spend like the states do? Now, we know the answer to that. How is this going to help the population of Chicago, particularly the minority population? And you're going to love this. The facts are that right now, 92% of black teens in Chicago are unemployed. 92%, ladies and gentlemen. And quite frankly, the pictures I've seen on Facebook of people protesting the minimum wage are minorities. And 92% of black Chicago, the teens, are unemployed. How is minimum wage hike going to help those who can't find work to begin with and have no skills to offer an employer? Maybe the Ferguson rioters should relocate to the steps of Chicago City Hall. Someone needs to shed light on this insanity. So again, I want to touch into an article that associates with it. So in 2010, Wisconsin was an economic disaster. Newly elected Republican Governor Scott Walker did the unthinkable when he started cutting state spending and reducing the deficit. What a concept. Since that time, he has turned Wisconsin's economy around. His economic policies have created jobs and revitalized neighborhoods and families. Without the help of a Republican-controlled state legislature, Walker could never have accomplished this. On January 12, 2015, Bruce Rauner will be sworn in as Illinois' 42nd governor. The Republican is facing a similar situation that Walker faced in Wisconsin 4 years ago. However, The big difference is that Illinois will still have a Democratic-controlled state legislature who has already indicated that they have much different agendas in store for the state rather than the new governor. Under the leadership of Democratic governors Rod Blagojevich, Blago, remember him, and Pat Quinn, Illinois' economic status is dismal at best. If you recall, Blago was impeached and removed from office because of corruption charges, and Quinn, who was his lieutenant governor, just took over where Blago left off. Quinn and fellow Democrats did their best over the past 2 years to hide and cover up the true state of the state's economy. Gee, you mean like Gruber covered up the numbers for Obamacare? One source described their methods as full of gimmicks and short-term stunts lawmakers use to mask how bad things are. I call it fraud. I call it breach of public office when you intend to deceive the populace. From information gathered, their creative budget policies could rival the juggling skills of Cirque du Soleil's best performers. Preparing to take the helm of a nearly sinking ship, Governor-elect Runner has had a chance to take a closer look at the state's true situation, and he stated, and I quote, "The deficit is far worse than has been discussed, you think?" Runner has indicated that he would like to start on the state's deficit by cutting out of control spending. Yeah, it's out of control, all right. However, the Democratic-controlled state legislature has gathered for a few more days in December before breaking for the Christmas holiday, and they don't look like they plan on stopping their spending ways. Well, why should they? They're locked in. They don't care. The people are completely brainwashed in that state. You know, they love Obama. They love Rahm Emanuel. One of the pieces of legislation they are contemplating is the expansion of state government by the establishment of a state health care exchange under Obamacare. Yeah, of course. That's going to blow out every state that adopts an exchange. The Senate has already approved the measure, and now a House committee has voted 9-6 to send the matter to the House floor for a vote. Democrats claim establishing a state-run exchange would help the state get up to $270 million in federal money. Residents will use the federal exchange pay a 3.5 fee for doing so. So you're going to get slapped with a fee. Oh, there's a hell of a lot of fees to this fraudulent tax scheme. Under a state-run plan, the state would charge a similar fee and would thus pay for itself. However, state Republicans have pointed out that many states that have established their own exchange and received federal funds are already running into budget shortfalls. Well, of course it is. Establishing state exchange programs have generally cost far more than originally estimated. Well, why is anyone surprised? I mean, who really bought the fact when Obama said, "And your plan will cost as much as a cell phone bill"? Oh, yeah, I remember who. Libretards. That's who. In order for the state exchange to pay for itself, they would need a minimum of 500,000 people to sign up through the state exchange and pay the state fee. In the first year of Obamacare, the entire state of Illinois only had 217,000 people sign up for health care coverage through the exchange, and that's not even accurate. Because as I talked about this months ago, they used stats to show who signed up, but that's not true. It was who just went into the website and inquired. And folks, I've got an even better article showing even more fudging of the numbers. So what happens to the pay-for-itself argument being used by Democrats if fewer than 500,000 people sign up? It seems that state lawmakers will have three options. Increase the fees they charge. Oh, that's going to get people excited. Use tax revenue assigned for other purposes, like maybe take away from education. Or raise state taxes. Folks, if you're a homeowner in Illinois, sell your house, get out. Two of these three choices are going to hit taxpayers in their wallets and will not go over very well. With the state economy facing a greater than reported deficit, and Democratic lawmakers working hard to further expand state government, Warner definitely has his work cut out for him. I don't know who the hell would sign up for that job. Who would want to be a Republican governor of that state? Unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a brief time out, and then we're going to see how the Supreme Court is looking at the ACA, and then we're going to look at the fudging of the numbers, and then we'll hear the latest about Jonathan Gruber on Capitol Hill. Dear valued listeners, this is Mikey B of Higher Truth Radio. My personal favorite charity is St. Jude's Research Center for Kids with Cancer. Now, we know the eugenicists and the Agenda 21 elitists have the cure, but they don't want to give it. So we, the people, have to take it ourselves. St. Jude's and children with cancer need you to fight for the cure. Folks, we're back on Higher Truth Radio. I'm your host, Michael B., knocking out the New World Order, one libtard at a time. So, some experts have counseled a Zen-like patience while waiting for the Supreme Court's consideration of the King case, and we'll get to that, who that is, which involves federal subsidies for Affordable Care Act insurance plans and is expected to yield a decision sometime in July. We have to wait for this. It's been observed that the prospect of subsidies being overturned in as many as 36 states could or should spur action in those states or in Congress to head off the consequences. Julie Robiter of Kaiser Health News has made her own Toward the Horizon of expert opinion and finds that things may not be so simple. An adverse ruling by the court could be very hard to counteract in the affected states. That's worrisome, especially because the data showing the effects of the ACA are very encouraging, which I don't even believe these stats, by the way. The latest figures compiled by a team from the Department of Health and Human Services, let's believe them, and published this past Wednesday in the Journal of Health Affairs indicate that medical costs in the U.S. rose in 2013 at the lowest rate in 50 years. The rate is expected to be about the same for 2014. And folks, I don't understand this, because I have heard and read over and over again how insurance premiums are doubling in 2012, 2013. So when I say they've only gone up 3.6%, who are they interviewing here? Because they certainly are not asking people who have private health insurance through a private employer. Because I assure you, they are not just going up 3.6%. That's half of a percentage point lower than the year before. That kept healthcare's share of the economy stable at 17.4. Blah, blah, blah. Here's the kicker, though. Watch this. Meanwhile, enrollments in Medicaid, an individual insurance plan, as open enrollment commenced this year, remains robust, with 765,000 enrollments reported by the government for the first 2 weeks of the enrollment period. Right. Medicaid. Medicaid has exploded. People don't pay for Medicaid. You, the taxpayer, pays for Medicaid. On top of that, people that have to buy individual health care plans, that's way more expensive than being pooled in with a company. So this 3.6% rise in health care spending is ridiculous. So I have no idea where they get this business. So Obamacare appears to be picking up steam. I doubt that. And will continue, if not derailed, by the Supreme Court. First, a brief primer on King versus Burrow. The case coming before the court, the plaintiffs apply a fairly tortured reading of the Affordable Care Act, yeah, I bet, to argue that the law bars federal tax subsidies for residents of states that have not established their own Obamacare insurance exchanges but relied on the federal government to do it for them. This viewpoint has been rejected by several federal judges and denounced by a large number of constitutional law experts. Among other things, it's contradicted by a 30-year-old precedent allowing federal agencies great leeway in implementing drafted statutory language. For these reasons, the court's decision to take up the case came as a surprise, and for supporters of the ACA, not a pleasant one. Among Robner's sources are legal experts who caution that creating state exchanges to counteract a court decision is not child's play. No, I'm sure it's very difficult. States would have to do more than just the bare minimum. And as stated in the previous article, states are already getting their budgets busted out. Their deficits are exploding. So, yeah, we need the Supreme Court to step in. We need the Supreme Court to step in and throw the whole freaking thing out because it's garbage. And now I'm going to take a phone call from my dear friend Linda Sills from right from the left coast. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Fine, Mikey. Thanks for taking a call. I'm glad you're hitting on the ACA situation. Are you familiar with Hillsdale College and some of the wonderful economic people there, professors? They, of course, advocate for the Austrian School of Economic Theory rather than the nonsense we're dealing with now. They hit on this pretty well, but basically they were summarizing saying the ACA has three major taxes in it. Two are taxes on full-time employment, and the other is a tax on income. So, yeah, you said the politicians won't call them taxes, but that's exactly what they are. It's awful. So I'm going to get into a little bit of this on my show, too, tomorrow. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. It talks about how they're penalizing full-time employment in this country. And like you said, especially with the small businesses, it's going to destroy – they're doing cloud and heaven, I'm telling you.
Well, yes, really they are. And it's not only the independent business owners. Papa John's announced months ago, and I guess they've done it, they were going to reduce their full-time employees' hours to get them under the
–
either 32 hours or 35 hours – I think
it's
the Obamacare regulation, right? So even Papa John's is going below that, and other companies are going to hire part-time people. But the mere essence that, first of all, we know it's a tax even without all this other gaga, because if the IRS can penalize you for not buying Obamacare, and if they only catch you when you file a tax return, well, by that of itself becomes a tax, and all taxes have to be first gone through the House of Representatives. That didn't happen. This went through the Senate. So right there it's illegal. And then as I get into fudging of the numbers, and then, of course, Gruber's remarks, and now he's testified on Capitol Hill, I'm going to play that clip. It's a blatant fraud. And what I'm trying to urge people that are going to file this coming April, you are paying for people who are receiving subsidies for the year of 2014. Well, guess what? You're paying for something that's fraudulent. So the IRS is collecting taxes from you to feed a fraudulent law. Therefore, your money is being taken fraudulently. So why are we not flooding the courts with lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit? That's my question. This is what we should be doing. And
well, there are several people that are flooding. I think it's the religious communities doing it, religious freedom, et cetera, and a few other things.
Well, that they're doing, but I'm talking about the populace filing lawsuits, having to pay taxes on their labor to fund a fraudulent program.
How do you force a populace to buy something if they don't want it and then penalize them if they don't? The whole thing is so unconstitutional from the get-go in my book, but, you know, that's just me.
Well, and this is what we have been saying, and this is why the entire government is in a state of treason. So I have to ask myself, why am I going to continue to fund a treasonous government? So basically, I'm aiding and I'm financing a crime. So then, wouldn't that make me an accomplice? Aren't I aiding and abetting a crime? I'm funding it.
Yeah.
Is that how I look at it?
That's one way to look at it. And the other part is, when they do these things, because they've got us so bound up with all these tax codes and UCC codes and all the rest of it, they're almost putting a gun to your head. I mean, it's not even a soft tyranny. It's just despotism, and it sucks. So
they literally are putting a gun to us, because if they feel like prosecuting you for tax evasion, they can. Now, I've seen where people have actually they've been on the ropes with the IRS for years, going back and forth, and just hit with fines and penalties. I'm not really running into anybody that is going to jail over this. I really think they want your money instead. I think they're probably too full at this point. I really think that they just, you know, want to make this a civil issue. And I don't think they personally can keep up. So I don't see why we're not all revolting against this, and I don't understand why we're not using the contention that why should we fund a crime?
Right.
That's basically what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I have a big problem with that.
Yeah, I've got a lot of problems with these guys. I love that manual that Sean put out. It's amazing.
Yes, the Redemption Manual, yes. And Sean has gone over my paperwork, and so this week, probably maybe either Thursday or Friday, I'm going to be filing a UCC 1 form, which will make me actually a creditor to the United Nations, the United States of America, and the state of Texas. I'm also going to be filing a copyright application that's basically going to make me the owner of my fake fraudulent corporate name, which is in all capitals and in all, derivatives thereof. And what will happen is anyone that uses that name to send me a letter or what have you, I could sue them for copyright breach. So I'll be filing that as well.
Good.
So, yeah, and you know, I found other information that specifically states who is bound to the federal income tax, and I found this website where people have published their refunds and their tax returns. So that's going to be exciting. And like I said at the top of the show, Linda, and I don't understand this. I put out a Facebook post on that subject. Only two people shared it. It was completely ignored. They'd rather talk about who should be getting vacant houses rather than talking about their wealth being stolen. I just don't get it.
I know. I have shared that manual with many people, not only on Patriot Families, but in other, you know, venues and individuals. So if they'll take the time to read it, you know, that's it, or try to understand it. I mean, it's very valuable. It's probably the only answer. I mean, without shedding blood.
Well, I think, unfortunately, I think that is an inevitability. But I think the way it's going to be staged, as I've been saying for like a year now, first we're going to fight each other for the crumbs that are laying in the street, and then at our weakest moment, that's when they'll roll in and just do a mop-up.
Right.
I really think that that's what they're pitting. They're going to pit ourselves against each other, and of course they're being very clever with, you know, the police brutality and
sure.
And of course, the race baiters, right? And the race baiters and the government are basically picking winners and losers. I don't understand why people aren't protesting about Eric Garner, but they'll protest about Mike Brown. And the name escapes me of the 12-year-old kid who was killed by having a toy gun in the neighborhood. I don't understand why that's not getting attention, but.
Right.
Well, Mike Brown, is getting the attention. I just don't understand it.
Yeah. The other one, I mean, the only analogy you can come to is that post where they had the Capitol building in D.C. and they said, Ferguson, you're burning the wrong buildings.
Well right. That's the one that I shared and that you saw.
I love it.
Right? Well, I mean, you know, that's absolutely correct. I don't understand what you accomplish by burning other people's property. However, go ahead, and then I'll do a follow-up. Real quickly,
other people have thought about this as well. What do you accomplish? And they've come to the conclusion that these people are sitting on the sidelines, the ones who are doing the actual criminal things of destroying property, just any excuse to go out and act like that. I mean, that's how low on the totem pole some of these folks are. And I, you know, that's kind of what I see. You know.
Well, also some are stating that, like Alex Jones stated that it's not really just the citizens that are doing it, that it's actually people on the outside, and it's actually orchestrated, perhaps, you know, like maybe, George, he didn't mention George Soros, but I want to equate that to how he manipulated the Ukraine revolution. So something where, you know, others are staging it for another reason. Now, Sean Lane, who was my guest last week, he said, which I just have not had time to research, that it seems like those businesses that were torched were already bought up from the government via eminent domain. Now, another angle is that this could all be staged so that the owners of the business can, if they can collect for arson on their insurance plans, and then put up new storefronts. So, you know, that could be another angle, or maybe get federal help to restore the neighborhood for free, which, of course, wouldn't be for free. It's the people that are paying this federal income tax. And I tell you, Linda, I have to say, I'm very leery. I got to think we're going to see a huge tax increase in 2015.
Oh, yes, I agree, especially with all the mandates kicking in on ACA. Probably many people in those neighborhoods who were just innocent shop owners and they did not deserve this, whether they got insurance or not. You know, I don't think that it was part of a huge conspiracy on every single person's part. You know, you've got criminals out there doing these things. There are several laws on the books that, you know, arson is bad. You may go to jail, you know, looting, hurting people's property. It's just, it's not supposed to be done. So, and many did go to jail. So, and of course, the lamestream media, they're not going to report that.
Well, I think at one swoop, that initial night, like 30 people were arrested or something. I think it was something. It was something like that. But what's even more alarming is the fact that the entire country can be so engrossed in that subject. And like, I had no choice but to deal with it. I had no choice but to spend two or three shows, and of course now we've kind of segued into it again, on this subject instead of talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I did get to talk
yep.
about, but not fully explain really as I want to, which is so dangerous on so many levels. But it's
oh
really interesting. Yo, Linda, you have no idea what is packed into this thing. It's gross. And,
well,
and
you know,
this,
if it's anything
if this
like
this does go through and if it does get utilized, we put it this way, we might not have shows much longer.
Oh, well, you know, plus they want to regulate and tax the internet, you know, turn it into a utility. That's Barry's next little evil thing. And the other thing, when you talk about the Pacific Partnership or whatever, the TPP,
yep.
which I believe George W. Bush also was involved in, the SPP, same kind of deal. Probably just
yep.
changed the name and went underground. Well, this all ties into this these corridors, which ties into the United Nations and Agenda 21. It's all part of their plan. And like Sean was saying, that the UN is the New World Order, and he is correct.
Oh, absolutely it is. It's certainly the main hub. It's like the it's the hitman. It's like the Luca Brasi
yeah.
in The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you know, Vito doesn't pull the trigger. Luca Brasi usually does. He's the guy that gets messy.
Right.
And certainly, yeah, the United Nations is, and really, it's a perfect tool, isn't it? All the nations sign into it. It gets a little stronger
sure.
over the years. We know that America and Britain really, really dominate it. And it's a really nice tool for the Illuminati to use to get
right.
us all into one big collective. And even
sure.
though it says in the Constitution that no treaty that's signed overrides the Constitution, but Washington, D.C. is going to tell you that's not true, and they're going to try to make us turn in a weapon, pay more taxes, all in the name of the United Nations.
Yep.
And so that's
yeah,
where we stand.
It's really, really sad, and people are not aware of these things. They just go about their daily lives, and it's really sad to see it. But, you know, you do your part, I do mine, others do. It's all we can do, Mikey, you know.
Yeah, well,
keep trying.
Again, you know, we're trying, but what's really discouraging to me is that people would rather talk about this and argue all day long than talk about the federal income tax, the TPP, all of our rights being eroded, we're being outright victims of thievery.
Oh,
and
it
people
is.
Just gloss right over it. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, and the Fox News people are quite guilty of what you're talking about. They will not let up on these things. And I mean, it's obviously good theater for them, and maybe they draw viewers. But I'm done watching it. I can't. I just can't see it anymore. And they keep perpetrating the same lies over and over again, as you well know, talking about what was it? Now they're talking about the waterboarding with Dianne Frankenfeinstein, and they're perpetrating this stuff. Oh, we got Osama bin Laden, full feathers, you know that.
Mm.
So, I mean, they just keep, they all do it. I just go, I can't believe, but I do believe because I see it, and they just keep doing it. Hannity, all of them. They're just propagating the same lies as the left. It's nuts.
Well, the whole thing, though, but it's not even Fox. Look at Alex Jones. Alex Jones spent at least 3 weeks covering Ebola. That's gone by the wayside, right? I mean, it was going to be it was going to be Walking Dead. It was going to be
right.
You better get this product. You better get that product.
Sure.
People are disappearing. I don't hear anything about Ebola again from him. And the last few weeks, he's spending time on this Ferguson police brutality business. Not once. I've been listening to him for so long. What I have shared and what I want to share Thursday about the federal income tax, he won't even talk about.
Wow.
What? He won't even. He has not even talked about. He's basically, well, it is, he's basically talking about things the mainstream media is talking about, but his spin on it.
Right.
Instead of talking about things we really need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, for me, that's kind of disconcerting to the fact that, well, you know, do I want to spend 3 hours listening to Alex Jones about police brutality? I understand that's prevalent. I understand it's happening. But is it safe to say that not everybody right now is being affected by police brutality, but at the same token, everyone that's paying the federal income tax that in reality should not be paying the income tax, aren't they
right.
being affected? I think the answer is yes. So I would think that these are the things that we should be talking about. It shouldn't be just me who, you know, doesn't even have 100 listeners.
Precisely. I agree with you, and that's why I have also talked a little bit. I'll probably try to get more into it on that Redemption Manual tomorrow on my show.
Good.
And also about, yeah, because people need to know it, and I'm going to read that short blurb that I kind of gave you above on the ACA as to how horrible it is in, you know, individuals and businesses. I mean, it's just nobody's going to escape this nonsense, and it's just one more layer of the usurpation of powers and the taxation ability of these clowns, and it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to tell people. We must.
Well, I can't find one person whose health insurance premiums have only gone up a little or has actually been reduced. I can't find one person to show me, and you know, they can hide their personal information, they can hide their address, their social security number, and what have you. I haven't seen one person prove that they've benefited from the ACA, other than maybe someone who had a pre-existing condition and can now, through Obamacare, which is massively expensive, get health care. But again, who's subsidizing this stuff? Well, the taxpayers are. And
of course.
Yeah, people say, well, we're getting subsidies. But subsidies mean that someone else has
right.
to pay for it. It's the adage, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. And it's you know, I was talking a little bit about the economic situation, and especially here in California, with the CalPERS and the sector union pension plans and all the rest. I look at it as maybe 3 years tops. It's going to implode. It's a house of cards, just like all of our structure right now is.
Mm.
And that $18 trillion in debt is not debt. We don't owe them anything. You can't pay debt with debt. You know,
well, that's right.
This thing is a house of cards. They're going to paint themselves into a corner. And if we react badly, that's why I'm hoping to be out of California when this hits, if we react badly and don't just dig into the hills and take care of our own and grow our own food, there will be blood in the streets. I don't want to be a part of that.
No, but here's the thing. It's a house of cards. It's going to implode, but who's going to crap out first? Is it we the
yeah.
people, or is it the scumbag that's making this happen? See, that's my worry. Is that how many casualties are there going to be? Like,
too many.
Yeah, right. Who's going to lose their job? Who's going to lose their homes? Yeah, it's great that eventually the system will collapse or may collapse. But in the time being, how many millions of people are going to pay the price?
Right. They're going to suffer.
Yeah.
yeah.
And how many are not going to recover? So to me, I would think that it's in our best interest to fight now, while we have something
mm-hmm.
to fight with. And what I mean by fight is defund the federal income tax, defund Obamacare and the health insurance industry before we get blown out and they collapse by default because we've collapsed
right.
first. Why should we collapse first? We're the victims here.
I know.
So, right, so if people really feel that eventually – this system will collapse, don't you want to be in the strongest position
sure.
financially independently when that collapse hits. That's what I think we would want to have happen. Yet, I seem to not be able to get that message across.
Well, you're gonna have to, we're gonna have to keep hammering away at it until they do. You know, we'll just have to follow Fox's lead and talk about it incessantly.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, my good friend Doc Green, who does a local radio show in Houston on the internet, RagingElephantsRadio.com, I swear, Linda, he sure sounds like a lot like my show the last 2 days in what you know he's been talking about and what we've been talking about, being in the Matrix, you know, how long are we going to comply. And it seems, though, even in his chat room, people talk about something else. It's like a taboo subject.
Subject, yeah.
You know, people don't want to deal with the eventuality. And as he said, as I've said, we consider ourselves suffering, short end of the stake, blah, blah, blah. But maybe we're still too fat and happy. Right? I don't understand. Why do we want to wait until critical mass?
Until it's so bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no other option. Yeah.
Right? Why aren't we being proactive? Why are we waiting to be reactive? This is the dilemma that I just have not been able to conquer.
And I think you're right on that point, because I believe that the powers that be are hoping that we don't be proactive and we do wait till, you know, the whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket.
I agree. So the next article I wanted to get into, because I wanted to stay on the Obamacare fraud. You know, the government and the libtards like to say that people are signing up, and that you know, we don't want people to have health care. We want people to die in the streets. But the actual truth is that the numbers we've been presented with have actually been fudged. So I want to quote this: with so much riding on the success of the ACA, officials in the Obama administration felt it necessary to inflate the number of Americans who have signed up for health care insurance. They tried pulling off the statistical sleight of hand, I call it lying, by combining the number of people who had purchased, you're going to love this, who purchased dental coverage on the health care exchanges with those buying health insurance. You believe that? You believe that?
Yeah.
They took people just buying dental insurance and piggybacked that number onto people that bought comprehensive health plans. So somehow the officials didn't think anyone would notice. Well, you'd think with the internet, someone would notice. Despite the fact that they had previously reported the dental and medical totals separately. Now, in May of this year, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services reported that 8 million individuals had bought medical coverage and about 1.1 had signed up for dental insurance. Then in September, the CMS reported that 7.3 million people had purchased insurance through Obamacare without specifying that the total included both medical and dental purchases. I mean, this is disgusting. The department...
They have to lie because they have to keep selling it because they know it's bad. I mean, they have to keep, you know, perpetuate what they want. They have to fudge it because they know bad, and they're just hoping certain people will buy into it.
Yep. And of course, the Health and Human Services Department is saying that a mistake was made. They erroneously folded sign-ups for the two different plans together. Oh, I see. It was done by error. John Gruber was just being glib on his health, on his ACA remarks, and we'll play that clip in just a little bit. And adding that, in fact, 6.7 million Americans had purchased medical coverage as of October 15th. So,
right.
It was an erroneous mistake. Now, how about It was just a freaking lie. And how about they're addressing it now because we've caught you? You know, it's like when one spouse apologizes to the other for cheating after they've been caught. No?
Yeah, because,
right?
Well, that's,
right.
That's what's going on here, yeah, in all the cases. They just got caught and they can't stand it.
Right. You see, the spouse isn't sorry for the cheating. The spouse is sorry for getting caught.
Right.
And that's the same thing here. They're not apologizing for purposely fudging the numbers. They knew what they were doing. They got caught. And now they're trying to say an error was made. So, the next article that we have is that Obamacare premiums are set to rise in 2015. Now, it is also stated that Barry has tried to do his best to not have this leak out until kind of successful. He didn't want this leaked out until after the elections, which it didn't help him anyway because, as we know, the Democrats got absolutely slaughtered. So many healthcare.gov customers will face higher costs next year. The Obama administration had to finally acknowledge. Now that's healthcare.gov. So it's obvious people that have used governmental instruments to get healthcare insurance that their premiums are going to rise. However, officials said millions of consumers who are currently enrolled can mitigate the financial consequences if they're willing to shop around for another plan in the marketplace that's becoming more competitive. Now, let me clear that up. What this really means is find a cheaper plan that will have a higher deductible, which means you're going to pay more out of pocket on the back end when you use it. And, of course, that also will mean less things covered, especially in private insurance. So that's not helping anybody. So, you know, it's a complete sham that officials said, well, you can counterbalance this increase by picking another plan that's more competitive. No, it's picking a crappier plan. But God forbid,
that's
you
what they wanted all along.
Yeah. So premiums for the most popular type of plan, which I think, as far as Obamacare goes, I think that's the silver plan, which has a huge deductible. I think it's somewhere between 5 and 10 Gs, so good luck with that. So it'll go up an average of 5% in the 35 states where the federal government is running the health insurance exchanges, said a report from the Health and Human Services Department. Now, you and I know when a government is quoting figures, if they're even slightly honest, they're the minimal figures. They'll never give you the real figures. So, however, the administration says about two-thirds of current customers can still find coverage comparable to what they have now for, listen to this, for $100 a month or less. Linda, who do you know? Who do you know that could honestly buy a health insurance plan for $100 a month?
Well, mine does because I'm on Medicare, but that's government, so.
Right. Well, that doesn't count. Let's talk about people in the private sector, you know, that are that are still working. Now.
No, I've never heard of it.
Right, and you see, and here it is. To further that, the estimate takes into account the tax credits that most consumers are entitled to, which covers about 3/4 of the cost. Now, see, here we go. Subsidies.
Right.
Who is going, see, tax credits or subsidies. That means somebody else has to finance these so-called entitlements. That means someone else has to pay for it. That means taxes have to go up.
Yes.
This is what people are not comprehending. And by the way, these subsidies or tax credits will cover about 3/4 of the cost. Now, that tells me that if someone is paying $100 and three-fourths is being covered, that tells me that plan really costs $400 at least. Well, name me one family that's paying only $400 a month. I don't know of any. I know that are paying $600 to $1,000. So, I mean, this whole thing is a complete sham. It's a complete, complete, utter sham. Nothing. No article that comes out about the ACA that doesn't tell you you are absolutely being raped. They're lies. I mean, they're all lies.
Goebbels would be proud.
What's that?
Goebbels would be so proud. Had to throw it in.
Uh-huh.
The big lies.
Yes. So I think it's time now that I play the Gruber clip. Now, I know you've heard it, but for those that haven't and that will hear the podcast, this man Gruber blatantly, he just lies. And there is no way that criminal charges cannot be laid on this guy. They have to be. So I'm going to play this clip, Linda, and then you and I can comment on it after.
Okay, here we go.
Yep.
Professor Gruber, what did you mean when you said they proposed it and that passed because the American people are too stupid to understand the difference?
When I said that, I was at an academic conference being glib and, quite frankly, trying to make myself seem smart by insulting others.
Are you offering the venue as a defense for saying it or for meaning it?
I'm offering it as a defense for using inappropriate and hurtful and excusable language to explain.
Well, what did you mean by too stupid to understand the difference?
Congressman, I didn't mean anything about it by it.
Well, you said it. You had to admit it.
I was once again being glib and trying to make myself seem smarter by reflecting.
Well, what did you mean when you said it was a very basic exploitation of the lack of economic understanding of the American voter? What did you mean by that?
Once again, it's another example of my inexcusable arrogance in trying to insult others to make myself seem smarter.
Well, what did you mean when you said the American people don't care about the uninsured?
Once again, that was an overstatement of trying to conjecture on political topics in which I'm not an expert.
Well, you know what, Professor Gruber, I have listened to you all morning talk about your lack of political acumen and that you're not a politician, so therefore you don't know not to call people stupid. Most of the people watching this morning aren't politicians, and they don't call people stupid. And I can't help but note, Professor Gruber, and another one of your quotes, which I'll read to you, that was politically infeasible. You remember saying that?
Yes.
So you do like to factor in the politics from time to time, don't you? And also happen to know, Professor Gruber, that usually you insult the American voter, not the American public. So you do factor in politics, don't you?
I have tried a number of occasions pretended that I know more about politics.
Do you think not being a politician is a defense? Is that your defense this morning? I mean, I know initially you said that you offered these comments at a conference. I think you meant conferences, plural, but you said conference when you went on a very obscure television show and initially apologized for what you said were inappropriate comments. And now today your defense is that you're not a politician. Is that the best you can come up with?
The best I come up with is to really just apologize for an inexcusable.
Well, but I want to know, I mean, the pervasiveness of your quotes is so much that it has to be more than that. It has to be more than just an episodic mistake that you made. Well, here, let me keep going. See if this helps you any. What did you mean when you said you wish that you had been able to be transparent, but you'd rather have the law than not?
Once again, it was my trying to conjecture about a political process in which I'm not an expert.
Well, what did you mean when you said it was written in a tortured way to make sure the CBO didn't score the mandate as a tax?
Once again, it was using inappropriate language to try to sound impressive about something to my colleagues.
Do you see a trend developing here, Professor Gruber?
I don't understand the question.
It's a lot of stupid quotes you've made. That's the trend.
A lot of
you see them?
Inexcusable quotes.
Yes. Right. And again, your defense is that you're not a politician. The lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. Well, what is a non-politician doing talking about political advantages?
A non-politician is talking about political advantages to try to make himself seem smarter by conjecturing about something he doesn't really know.
So you're a professor at MIT and you're worried about not looking smart enough?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you succeeded if that was your goal. Now, I want to ask you, are you sorry? When did you realize that these comments were inappropriate? Because it took you about a year to apologize, so I'm trying to figure out if you realized sooner that they were inappropriate, or was it just the morning before you went on MSNBC that you realized that it was inappropriate? When did you realize that these comments are indefensible and inappropriate?
I honestly didn't remember making them.
You didn't remember calling your fellow citizens stupid, and you didn't remember saying that you're the only person who cares about the uninsured, that the rest of your fellow citizens don't give a damn about the uninsured? You don't remember saying that?
I don't, because they were really glib and thoughtless comments that I made.
Well, Professor Gruber, let me just tell you what it looks like from this vantage point, is that you thought that they were really pithy and really funny until the video showed up. And then even then, it took you a little while to apologize. And what I'm struggling with is whether your apology is because you said it or because you meant it. Which are you apologizing for, because you said it or because you meant it?
I didn't mean it. I'm apologizing.
All of these quotes that I just read to you, you didn't mean a single one of them. Not a one.
What I said, Congressman, is that I was using glib, thoughtless, and really inexcusable language.
You used them a lot. You used them a lot, Professor Gruber, which tends to undercut the notion that you were sorry for an episodic misstatement. I just read to you about 10. You see why people might possibly think the apology is a little disingenuous? Maybe. I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
So, Linda, here's the thing, though, about the line of questioning. I don't understand why Congressman Gowdy hones in on the stupid voter remark instead of the fact that the numbers were fudged. So
right.
The congressional budgetary, the CBO, would not realize that this was a tax. That's the criminal aspect of right of this situation. I could care less if he calls me stupid or the guy down the street stupid. You could certainly do that all day long. The criminality is the fraudulent numbers. I don't understand why that wasn't honed in enough, why that wasn't keyed in enough. What do you think?
Well, that said, I do like what Trey does. I think he's pretty good at his job, and I like the way he hammers these people. But maybe because, when they give him time to do these questionings, they, like you said, he has to yield back, and they don't. It could be a time element thing, but you did pick up on the right thing, that he should have gone after that. Although, as you can see, Gruber is not going to answer the questions. He's just going to keep repeating the mantra. So, could be a combination of those two.
Well, but see, here's the problem I have with these congressional committee things. Do you notice that they never come right out and ask yes or no questions?
ISA does that
see
more
what
than
I mean?
Trey, but yeah.
You see,
yeah.
And then what happens when you ask open-end questions, you allow wiggle room.
Right. Yeah.
Said, you are quoted as fudging the numbers within the plan to have the CBO not call it a tax. Did you do that? Yes or no? He can't say no, because if he does, well, then you just play the video clip. And then this nonsense that he was just being glib with his colleagues. No, he wasn't. He wasn't making these statements at the water cooler. He was on a panel. And the fact that he doesn't remember, you don't remember attending a panel and then discussing your part in it, and especially in the fact that you know that you're lying and that you've committed fraud, and you don't remember that? See, where's that line of questioning?
Right.
That almost makes me feel like even that committee is staged. That Trey Gowdy is just doing a dog and pony show, so we'll think that the Republicans are doing something.
Right. No, you're probably hitting on a correct thing there, because this has been going on since the Benghazi hearings, the IRS hearings. It you're right. It's a dog and pony show to make us believe that they're doing something. I don't know. It's pretty bad.
Right. And I don't understand. You know, Alan Jones played the clip. That's how I knew the clip existed. And then I grabbed it on YouTube, made it into, you know, an audio file, and we're discussing it. But even Alex Jones didn't discuss the fact that why aren't we keying in on the criminality? Box this man in. Box him in. Right? With yes or no questions. Did you make a statement that you fudged the numbers so the CBO would not call it a tax so it could be passed through the Senate and made into law? Yes or no? And you give him two chances to either say yes. If you go, well, you call him for contempt and you put handcuffs on him.
I agree.
That is what you do when you are doing a legitimate inquiry. And I'm not a lawyer, Linda, but I think common sense rules the day that this is what you do.
Well, yeah, if you're serious about getting the job done and getting these guys held accountable. It's like I said, it's part of the show they put on. It's really sad.
Right, and this is why it's going to come down to, you know, either we the people just talk about this stuff and continue to comply, or we draw the line in the sand and together we say enough, and if you want some, come get some. Because, I mean, look, we are going to be destitute.
Exactly. It might take some time, but like you say, why wait till the last second? You're
right.
Correct on that.
Right. When you have nothing to fight with, when you can't get together as a group and file a class action lawsuit, when you can't defy the government peacefully and keep what wealth money, you know, what you have, and either convert it to something else or hide it, whatever you need to do. To have that strength to be able to fight if your electricity is shut off, or if you take it out of your home and you have, you know, something else on the back end that could help you recoup, why would you wait until you have nothing? Why wait until we're fighting with each other in the streets, get mopped up, thrown into a FEMA camp, and it's ball game over? I mean, I don't understand why we're waiting.
Yeah, it goes back to the revolutionary statement. I think it was Patrick Henry. And he says, why do we stand idly by waiting for them to do this to us? Because that's what that was going to happen to them as well. But they took the lead and did something. People are – it's crazy, Mike. I don't know what the answer is. But I think that we can't let them divide us, and that's – you know, something that I know Bill said on his show. He says, we've got to unite on something. and he was searching for it, and I typed in the chat room later, I said, we should unite on godly principles and the Declaration of Independence. That would go do us well.
Yes, yeah, see, that's the problem. You hit the nail on the head. You mentioned Patrick Henry, and of course we could talk about all the others. They were real leaders. And there were men of influence who got together and led a pack. And those people worked in unison and had an effect. That's the missing element, Linda, is that we don't have leaders. And, you know, you and I could call each other leaders, but really, you know, we don't. These guys were prominent men in their communities. John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They were already dominant leaders. They were men of wealth, right? Statesmen,
right?
Lawyers in their own right. So they could lead. You and I mean, not to put us down, and I'm not, because we're all special and unique, you know, in God's eyes, but in society, you know, who's Linda Sills and who's Michael B?
Yeah,
where's Alex Jones? Where's Mark Levin? Where's Michael Savage?
Exactly. And the thing is, what we're doing, because we don't have the power that the boys had back then, we're like the Paul Revere's. We're just sounding the alarm. And we're just the modern-day pamphleteers trying to get the message out, because that's all we can do right now. And that's...
No one's listening. I mean, you have a handful of people in your chat room. Sometimes I get a handful of people in mine. I mean, who's really hearing it? And I think that's the missing denominator here. And right, and not only that, if you have the slightest disagreement with someone in a group, you're ostracized. So you have and Alex Jones, he did talk about that today, that we should be uniting under a common cause and letting subtle differences go. But that's not happening here.
I get it.
Right? If you have a counter opinion to the group and you're going to express that opinion, especially when people are just sitting around bitching, and if you have something constructive, but you're threatening that pack, you're ostracized.
Yes.
So
absolutely,
right? And modern John Adams of our time really should be Michael Savage, Mark Levin, Alex Jones. I don't know, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh.
Well, they do have audiences, yes, and influence.
They should be leading the charge. Now, I understand that, you know, they have a lot to lose. First of all, Levin and Hannity and Rush, they're all owned by their particular network. And, right, and I'm sure they have an FCC license to be on terrestrial radio. So, you know, maybe they're afraid that they'll be stripped of it. And so, you know, maybe they're afraid they'll be arrested, if you will, or what have you, and then nobody will hear anything. Now, Alex Jones is completely independent, so I don't know what his deal is. But again, if he's afraid of losing too, well then here we go. Decision, right? Decisions to do or not to do are being governed by fear. Then we've lost.
Right.
Because Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, etc., Ben Franklin, were fearless. They were not afraid.
Well, because you know what I think the big difference is, even though some money and influence, they could see beyond what other people could see, and they see the despotism that was not only coming from England and King George, see the future in that if they didn't do something, they would lose a heck of a lot more than just their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, that's what that thing was our lives, fortunes, and sacred honor. They put it all out there because they felt they had nothing left to lose anyway, because it was going to be inevitable. So they recognized that. He acted accordingly. And that's, you know, like you said, but they got to that point where we don't want to get to, but maybe because of human nature, that's where it's going to lead. I don't know.
I don't know, because my thing is, now, they saw into the future, and that's great. They did. You're right. But we're now their contemporaries, and we are slipping into the same position they were in, and we saw how they became successful. Why aren't we using that blueprint? They had nothing to go on. We do. And yet,
yes,
we're not using it.
Which is, I know, it's absolute almost insanity. That's why I love the Redemption Manual, because he does talk about the founding, and he talks about God and you know, divine order, et cetera, and our sovereignty as, you know, citizens of heaven, which makes sense, and that's what I think those founders thought too, and that's why they derived all of their ideas from the, I do believe, from the Bible. When he
said
they hold these truths. Yeah. So, I mean, my God, it's pretty literal. It's easy to see.
But see, here's the thing. If one person says to the IRS or a judge, I'm a citizen of heaven, they'll just laugh at you and put you in handcuffs. However, if a million people, one, tell the federal income tax it doesn't apply to me and actually mean it. And number two, file a class action suit by a million people, even half a million. But let's say a million people filing a lawsuit. Hey, I am a citizen of heaven, bub. I'm not responsible for this. They have to listen. How do homosexuals get their agenda passed? How do minorities get their agenda passed? They group to get, thank you. Why aren't we uniting? Why aren't we pooling money together? Why aren't we getting good lawyers? Because let me tell you something, Linda, for the right price, any lawyer will present any freaking case.
Right.
All they care about is their whores. All they care about is money.
Exactly.
You show up with a check.
Price, yeah.
You'll show up with a check, they'll swallow. Excuse my bluntness.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. It's all about the money. So they'll work for you. So why aren't we doing this? This is what I just don't understand.
Well, look how fractured the Tea Party has become. I mean, this is indicative of what you're saying. And to try to get people to be that cohesive, because we have a large populace now, I mean, it's tough. And we're fighting a huge Leviathan. Hell, they only had to fight King George. We're fighting every agency out there. I mean, it's a mess.
Well, when you say fighting only King George, that's not really true. It was Parliament. It was local governments in the colonies. And it was the British Army already here and coming in.
Yeah.
And you know what also, Linda? There was a 24-hour news coverage showing people getting shot up. They're not going to come in and shoot us all to ribbons. They would have done that in Ferguson if they thought they could get away with it. They know deep down they can't.
Right.
They can't do it. They can only roll in the tanks if we're all killing each other. They can't do it. And if we're not shooting each other up, but we're protesting an illegal tax and illegal use of it, they can't shoot us down. The entire world is watching.
Right. Well, if you and your cronies and people that are, you know, trying to get these messages, you come up with a great idea that will unite us and get us to do it, let me know.
Well, we need, honestly, I think what we need is we need a class action suit against the IRS and against the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
We need to present the case that, one, the federal income tax does not apply to most working Americans, that it's
never
actually,
yeah.
Right, it's actually very specific as to who really is liable. I mean, I've got the website. I've got the laws. I've got them. They're very
yep.
specific. And I think we need to present the case that enough is enough.
Agree.
And the best lawyers in the country will do the case for the right price.
There you go.
And that's what needs to be done.
Mike, I'm going to let you go so I can
yep.
go take care of this stuff we're going to do. And thank you so much for you just keep up the good work. God bless.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'll do my best to call in. I can't guarantee because I'll still be working.
Yes.
But I do want to listen in on your
okay.
your thoughts on the redemption manual. So
yes.
I will at least be listening in and see what you've come up with, because I just have not had the time to read the whole thing.
Sure.
I've only read the parts where I'm filing those forms.
Right.
And
I got through the whole thing. It's fantastic. Yeah, I need to go back to the kind of the beginning or the, like, page 36 or something like that, because there was some fabulous stuff and how they lay out different things in it, like point by point, which might get people to start thinking.
Yep.
You know, it just jumped out at me. So, all right, Mikey, you have a great one. I'll just sign off on the chat room and hang out with you for a bit till I get putting the flyers out for our meeting with the mayor tomorrow.
Sounds good.
We're doing a class action.
There you go. I think I'm just going to do one more article, and then I think I'll call it a night.
Okay. Thanks, Mikey. Have a good one.
You got it.
Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Linda Sills of Right from the Left Coast. You can hear her right here on Blog Talk Radio, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It's a great show. She's an Agenda 21 guru. She's going to talk about the Redemption Manual. And again, this is a document where, folks, we all need to read this and understand that we actually have more power than we're being led to believe. And this is one big screw job that I don't understand why we want to sit here in unison and just take it when we don't have to. I'm going to take a brief timeout, and then I'm going to get into the status of race relations in America under a black president. This is Michael B., Higher Truth Radio, knocking out the New World Order one libtard at a time.
Darkness that is
Michael B. of Higher Truth Radio back live with you, and that was Rush, Enemy Within. And folks, that's what's doing us in, is the enemy within. And that enemy within is fear. Fear. We seem to be afraid to exercise our God-given rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Why are we afraid, and where are the leaders? Where are the Patrick Henrys? Where's John Adams? Where's John Hancock? Where have all the good men, and now certainly women have just as much of a voice as men do, where are they? We seem to be a ship without oars, and a rudder, and an anchor, and a captain. I don't understand why we are tolerating this nonsense. Do you not understand that if we don't take control of our lives now, we lose that opportunity? I know that some may say that there are young people that are waking up, but you have to understand, folks, the young people that are waking up are children of parents that are like my age, approaching 50 and over, which is a very small group of awakened ones, and thus it is a very small percentage of young people waking up. But even if people wake up, if we don't unite and work together, it doesn't matter who says they've woken up. If we are afraid to take real action, we lose. Sitting on the southern border of Texas, shooing away a handful of illegals every day while thousands of others are coming in from areas you're not patrolling, is not doing anything. Quoting the Articles of Confederation, are not doing anything. Do you think the homosexuals were quoting all men are created equal on the court steps? No. They were filing lawsuits. They were saying, hell no, we're not putting up with this anymore, and you're going to deal with it. They were hiring the best lawyers in the land. They became such a force that politicians said, hey, we better listen to these people because they may get me elected and reelected. Do you see how that works? Don't you think if millions of us got together, filed lawsuits, hired the best lawyers, don't you think politicians might say, hey, you know, if I want to get reelected, I better support this anti-federal income tax deal that's going on. I better side with these people and agree that people have been wronged and have had taken money stolen from them. Don't you think that the mainstream media and politicians could spin that in their favor? Don't you think that falling networks like CNN and MSNBC would get behind that if they thought there were enough people that would come back to their networks if they were behind such a move. Don't you think that people like Alex Jones, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity would start to talk about this if there were enough of us filing lawsuits against the federal government for fraud? And why aren't we doing that with the Affordable Care Act? There is too much evidence that from the onset, the ACA was written, constructed, passed, and then approved by the Supreme Court via fraud. Why aren't we filing class action suits? You even bring it up, and it gets totally glossed over. And most of you will be hearing about this via podcast. I'm going to see if I can call into Doc Green's show tomorrow. But we've got some bad news from the Republic of Texas. It seems that they wanted to set up an LLC from someone out of New Mexico, handed over a money order check and documents, and mysteriously, they're claiming that the post office has lost it. And it may take up to 6 months to investigate. Now, I don't know what's going on here, folks. I don't know if this was done on purpose by the post office or the agency. I have no idea. Purely happenstance? No idea. But now we seem to have this apparent delay. And this was to create an online donation payment option to help raise funds to hire a law firm to go to an international court to show that Texas should be a sovereign nation, that the United States of America Corporation violated its treaty with Texas. So we once again seem to be wandering in the desert, but we don't have a Moses. Who will be that Moses? Who will be that Patrick Henry? Who will be that Thomas Jefferson? Folks, I was going to read an article about what people think of race relations under Barack Obama. But you know what? I'm going to wrap it up tonight. I think I've said enough. I'll come back Thursday at 8 p.m. And have more for you. With that, this is Michael B. of Higher Truth Radio, knocking out the New World Order, one libtard at a time. See you Thursday night.